Detta är en intervju med herr Reinhardt Galveston, Texas. Han var född 1905 i Galveston. Hans fader var John Reinhardtsson som var född i Norge. Modern Augusta Olsen var född i Holtestad på Öland. Och det är idag den 9 december 1974.
What year was your mother born?
1872.
72, ja, det var Holtestad.
Holtestad.
And did you speak any Swedish in the home here in Galveston?
A little. She spoke quite a bit when we were small, but we understood her. We would answer her in English, but we could understand.
How about your father? Did he speak Norwegian to you, or?
Well, you know, the man doesn't have as much say as a woman in the house,
so the
Swedes.
There was more Swedish then.
The Swedish conversation dominated. But we went to the church services, and there, when we were small, all the sermons were in Swedish. Until I was about, I guess about 20, then it phased out.
And your father, he didn't.
He didn't try to speak Norwegian, though. He would speak in Swedish because.
Well, he understood Swedish perfectly.
Oh yes.
No problem with the sermons. And
my
so
father had been a merchant seaman, and he traveled all around the world, and he knew the language pretty well, the Swedish language.
So what year did he came to?
He came in about 1890 or 91.
Right here to Galveston.
Yeah, and my mother came here about 93, I guess, 1893 or something like that.
So he stopped off here and stopped for good.
Yes.
He didn't go on the sea again.
No, he, as a matter of fact, he was a crew member, and he just didn't rejoin his ship when it sailed.
Oh, so he loved
because
it.
There were opportunities here for employment along the waterfront.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of Scandinavians encouraged him to stay here because there was that work, you know. He became a longshoreman and what they call a screwman. They used to have a specialized way of loading cotton on ships, and they used to use equipment. They would make a bale tighter, fit tighter, and they used to use screws and jacks. So he became what they call a screwman.
Oh, I see. So this was the main sailing port then for cotton? And
yes, it was. It was the main port in Texas, yeah.
That was bigger than Houston.
Oh, yes, that was. There was
nothing up there.
There wasn't anything except a little canal there, a little bayou. It was dredged. I think it was about maybe 20 years after my dad came here that before they dredged out the channel up there. So there wasn't any port of Houston to speak of.
So this was
just small barges.
This was the one.
That's right.
It took all the foreign ships in. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the big ships could come in too here. There was no.
Oh yeah, they had pretty good sized ships coming here. Yeah. Flags of all nations. In fact, they were mostly foreign ships in those days. United States didn't have any merchant marine to speak of.
Oh, it was all Norwegian and Scandinavian. And
German and
German.
British and Scandinavian and so on.
Mm-hmm. So, what was the reason for your mother coming over here to? She came direct to Galveston.
She had a sister that was here ahead of her and had encouraged her to come.
What was her name?
Her name was Johanna, and she married a man named Jackson, and he was also from Sweden. I asked my mother that question, and it seemed to be a matter of economics. They were raised on a farm, and it seemed that the boy, they had a brother, Alfred, that stayed there, he would be entitled to the farm. In fact, her father died at a sort of an early age. He was lifting a stone or something, and he ruptured himself, caused internal bleeding. So he died rather early for a Scandinavian. I think he was about 45 or something like that when he died. So the son was going to carry on the farm, and it left the girls kind of out on a limb, although we had one. She had two sisters that stayed in Sweden, and she had two sisters that came here to Galveston. The one that preceded her, then she came, and then a younger sister. And they did domestic work. That was, I guess, all they were qualified. They were handicapped. They couldn't speak the English language, and they hadn't had any particular training. And girls from Sweden were very much in demand by the people that were able to hire domestic help, the businessmen here. In fact, my aunt, my mother's oldest sister worked for one of the, and her husband, that is she, Mr. and Mrs. Jackson, worked for the wealthiest man in Galveston, the Seeley. You've heard of the, I don't know if you've heard of the name Seeley.
I haven't heard.
Well, the Seeley Hospital and the Seeley Bank and all that. And so that he was the yard man and coachman, and she was the cook, I guess you'd say. And my mother worked for a prominent Jewish family here named Blums. That's all I can remember where she worked. And then she met my dad, and they decided they'd like to try try to see what they could do.
She joined the Zion Lutheran Church.
She was a charter member. Have you heard about the Captain Anderson?
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit more about him to fill in?
Well, I don't know what you know.
Well, as a matter of fact, not too much. I know he was a Lutheran, and he was a captain. But what kind of captain did he have?
That was a sort of an honorary title given to him. He was superintendent of construction for the Galveston Wharves, and he was well thought of by Mr. Seeley. Mr. Seeley also owned the Galveston Wharves. It was a private company in those days. And Anderson was very he was a religious man, and he used to try to he did missionary work.
Anderson.
No. Let me see. Nils J. Anderson was his name, and I don't know that a captain was honorary. He was never a captain of anything that I know of. But he was superintendent of maintenance and construction on the wharves when they would build. They didn't have to have big construction contractors to build these sheds. They were simple wooden piers, and he was a pretty good carpenter, and he got to be a superintendent. And he told me that he used to go down to where the screwmen meet, you know, the longshoremen and screwmen. They had a lot of Scandinavians, and he would invite them to church. We'd have a man come down from Austin, Stamline. You may have heard of that name.
He was a former pastor.
Yeah, well, he was up at Palm Valley. Have you been in Palm Valley? Yeah,
yes.
He was up there. He may have served here temporarily, but he used to come down on special trips to try to get this church organized. And Anderson would go around and invite these people, and they used to, you know, laugh at him and kid him and so on. And he was accused of kind of blackmailing them. If you didn't come to your church, you wouldn't work for the Galveston Wharves. But he said that was not so. But a lot of people accused him of favoring the Swedes, and particularly those that came to the church. But he knew from experience that they were honest, reliable, hard workmen. So that's the kind of people he wanted. Let's see what else I can tell you. He was a treasurer of the church for many years, and he, of his own funds, he would help, you know, provide for the ministers. So he didn't have any children of his own, so the church, I guess, was his hobby. And he was much concerned about it. And of course,
he saw the need then for
organized, yeah. And it happened that my mother was here, and others, my mother's sister, and they were all became charter members.
Was it a tough town, Galveston, when the 1890s?
In what way?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of sailors come together, and sometimes they are roughnecks. And
yeah. I don't think it was any worse than any other city of comparable size at that time. They had saloons, and they had fights. And
was there more saloons than churches? They usually measure, by the way.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, that's in the days when people used to go to the corner store and buy a bucket of beer, you know. But yes, I guess there were more saloons than churches. But I don't think it was... I hadn't heard my dad or mother say it was particularly bad or tough in those days.
So this Captain Anderson, then, he got a sizable group together and...
Yes, and started the church, yeah.
And there was Pastor Stemlin, then, there was...
He was one of the early ones. I'd have to look at the records there. One of the early ministers that we had here probably doesn't mean anything to you unless you are familiar with the history of the Augustana Synod. Pastor Sagerhammer, who is president of the Pacific Synod His father was an early minister here. Did you ever see that on the church roll?
Yeah. Now, this would be something for you
to,
in the future,
when
you get out to the West Coast.
He was here a short while, and I don't think he was married then, and this may or may not be of any interest, because if you're getting a history of the whole Swedish, this is just a little incidental thing. But I had one of my cousins, an older one, was kind of interested in this Segerhamma. I heard Mother talk about it, and then when he pulled out, she was probably a little disappointed. She'd probably had notions of, the girls get BA degrees now. In those days, they used to look for a PF, pressed fru.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they wanted.
There was a sure way of life, huh?
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah, so I think she was, she played the organ or piano or something. Anyway, Mother used to talk a little bit about it, that she was a little disappointed that it didn't materialize. However, she moved to Kansas, and she married a lawyer there, and then they moved to California. She has two fine children. She's dead now.
So the flesta som kom hit till Åheim, you understand Swedish? Mostly sailors then came to Galveston.
Yeah,
you would say so. I mean,
you mean in the 90s, in the early 90s? Yeah. Sailors, and then others who had skills in carpentry or in the building trades, painters, carpenters, bricklayers, masons of different kinds came here because of opportunities. People who came here would write home and tell them of the opportunities that were here. My uncle, my mother's brother-in-law, came here. And he was a carpenter, and he lived to be about 90, and he was...
He stayed here?
Yeah. His family never did come over. I don't know what the problem was. They were a little fearful or something, but he had two daughters that stayed there. He had two sons that came here, but they were farmers, and they settled in Kansas. And from Kansas, they later moved to Colorado and did some irrigation farming at Las Animas. I don't know if there was a Swedish community there or not. But anyway, then they moved to California and were gardeners and got into the lawnmower repair business and that sort of thing. Now, that's the type of work that the Swedes did, yeah.
Uh-huh. But
we had a few professional people. There was a man here that... he wasn't very active in our church, but he was considered one of the prominent businessmen here. He used his knowledge of seamanship so that he organized a fleet of tugboats. His name was Suderman,
uh-huh.
And he was a successful businessman. He had at least a dozen tugboats that were used up and down the channel, towing and assisting the big ships into the harbor and up to Houston and to Texas City.
Oh, and he was also active in the politics then?
He was active in politics, yes.
Oh.
Yes, he was.
Suderman. How about the stevedores now and the longshoremen? Were they organized early here in the Galveston?
Yes, I believe that there was a union, a screwman's association, which...
And they were strong enough to...
Yeah, they were organized, I'm sure, before 1900. I feel sure that they were. And the carpenters, of course, had a union organization, and the painters and the bricklayers and the plumbers. I don't know.
Was it hard to get into the union? Or
I don't remember. It was later, but when they first came here, in fact, that was why my dad jumped ship.
Uh-huh.
Actually, that's what he did. He didn't rejoin his ship. He wasn't accidentally left. He was encouraged to stay here because of the employment opportunities, and he went to work right away.
And he liked the area, the climate?
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how well he liked it, but he was a fellow that wasn't very fussy about where he lived. He's lived
He sails, you know, and he's been all over the world, and he's sailed for 7 years, so he's...
Over 7 years?
Yes, he was acquainted with a hot climate. He was in Africa, and he was down in Australia and so on, so he's no stranger to different weather conditions.
And he didn't go back to Norway?
Never did go back, no. My mother went back to Sweden once after her first child was born, and she stayed there a year. Her brother, Alfred, came over and stayed a while, but I believe that was before my mother's father died. And when he died, or anyway, he went back to Sweden.
So you remember, no, you can't remember the hurricane or the storm then, but...
All I remember is what she told me of it, yes.
And what have they told you about it that they remembered?
Well, it was a terrible ordeal for her. The place where she was living is now out in the Gulf. The seawall, it was about at least 100, 150 yards out into the Gulf now. That much of the shoreline was washed away. They were right, their house was right close to the beach. And what I remember is they didn't seem to understand what was coming on. They knew the water was rising, but there was no particular alarm. And as it got worse and worse, they stayed in the house until it was too late to do anything about it. The water was too high to wait, and houses around them began to get blown into bits and a lot of wreckage. So they stayed in the house as long as they could, and then they had to climb out, and from this house they climbed on from rooftop to rooftop and tumbled over the debris, and in the process they lost their two children. They don't know just how. One was washed out of mother's arms, for one thing, and they don't know what happened to the oldest girl, who was 4. The youngest one was an infant. And at one time, my father was in this debris that he was completely covered by the water, and my mother just reached up and grabbed him and pulled him by his scalp, his hair, and pulled him out so they could breathe and work himself free of this wreckage. And in the process, she also had an arm broken. And of course, it was this terrific wind and rain beating on them and cold, and it was just an ordeal.
It was in October.
It was in August. It was September. September the 7th. 8th. September the 8th, yeah. It was in September.
Wasn't it daytime that struck, or...?
Well, I imagine it was, but it lasted, you know, several hours. It lasted into the night. Mm-hmm. So it was... I haven't even thought about those details in recent years, but those are the highlights. And the church, of course, her interest was in that. The Swedes that were here, their center of interest, the thing that united them in a foreign land, was this church, where they could get together and meet each other on a social basis and hear their own language spoken by a pastor. I don't know how many of the what loss the church suffered. It's probably in the records, but it was quite a blow to them too.
So the church was
I don't know where it was then.
Very important, and to reconstruct homes for people that lost their belongings and so forth.
Well, I don't know just how much aid they got, but somehow or other they had
it was quite a
determination. There are lots of the members of the church lost everything, but they didn't give up, and I don't know how they got helped. There must have been some temporary aid from some source. The church wasn't in a position to help them financially.
No, because they were...
Because they've always had to struggle to pay the pastor, you know. That's the history of our church here. Yeah. And pay the bills, you know. But somehow or other, we've managed to do it, haven't we? Did come from devout Christian homes. And being in church and associating with church activity was just as natural as breathing to them. And then they were in a foreign land, and they couldn't speak the language. And they felt at ease there. They felt with their own kind, even though they came from different parts of Sweden. And then I guess the pastor was a type that would understand their problems and would encourage them. So it was a natural thing for them.
Do you remember the changeover from Swedish to English in the sermon?
Oh, yes.
What did they say, the old people, about it?
They
Well, they kept it up.
They was like immigrating to a new land.
Yeah, yeah. But after all, when the changeover took place, most of these people had been here for many years, like 15 or 20 years.
So your mother didn't have any problems with the English, though?
Because gradually she had learned it by her association with other people, her neighbors and her friends. And she spoke in a broken accent, but gradually she understood it. And she had a lot of friends that were English-speaking. So she missed the Swedish because, you know, those people only thought God spoke in Swedish. They couldn't understand English very good, you know. So they liked the old familiar Bible passages and the old familiar hymns that they had. They weren't the same in English. Like, you know, the song Triggeri Kening and Vara. Well, you can sing it in English, but it's not the same. Yeah, the translation is a little different. And the changeover was this, that it was gradual. First of all, they went into English services in the evening. Högmässa, the morning service, was in Swedish. Then gradually it was every other. The congregation would vote on it. The English-speaking people who were having difficulty with the Swedish, they started fighting for English. They had bilingual pastors in those days. You had to learn Swedish to graduate from our seminaries as well. Swedish and Greek, I guess. So gradually it got to be every other Sunday. And finally, the Swedes were so outnumbered that as a concession to them, they permitted one Swedish service a month. And then it ended when we couldn't get any bilingual pastors. The last one that I remember was Herman Larson. Wasn't he the last one that could speak?
That would go back just right after 1930.
Yeah, yeah. It phased out in 1930. And here he was a native-born American, and you could... His Swedish was book Swedish. It wasn't natural. But we had a Pastor Herlin who was... I guess he was born in Sweden, but came here at an early age. But he had the ability to talk conversational Swedish so that even I could understand his sermons. But when we had some of those Swedes that come down from Central Texas that would try to spout off like a Swedish pastor was, well, it would be a lot of phraseology and I couldn't quite understand it. But Herlin had the ability to just make it conversational, and he would use the simplest Swedish. Maybe that's because that's all he knew. But he was a self-trained person. I guess he studied at college, but most of his Swedish came from studying it and practicing it, even though he came here at an early age. I think he was born in Sweden. But that's about the way the Swedish was phased out, and I'm sure that's the way it happened in most communities.
How about other activities now, outside the church, for instance? Were there any groups founded here or formed by societies,
yeah,
and other things?
They had...
Aid
well, that's part of the church.
Yeah, but I mean outside the church.
Well, was there a Swedish group that had, like, dances or parties? It seems to me there was.
Called the Sweya Society, but I don't know who sponsored it, yeah. But they had Swedish dances and stuff.
Yeah, there was...
The Galveston organization, or was it nationally oriented, or you don't know?
I think it was local. Think it was local, yeah. See, all the Swedes didn't go to church, you know.
No.
But there were a few that felt that they wanted to have
When they married, though, didn't the minister take care of them? Did they go to the...
Oh, they did get married in church,
in
yeah.
In church, most
yeah.
of them.
But there was a Swedish group, as I recall it, before 1920. It sort of phased out after that. They would have social affairs maybe three or four times a year. And, well, we never went because I was small, and my mother, she was probably thought that they were worldly group and...
wouldn't associate with them.
That's right. Oh. And maybe she was never invited because she couldn't dance or anything like that.
How about sick and AIDS societies? You haven't heard anything about that?
Nothing. There was no none that I know of.
It went to the church then if something was needed.
Well, or maybe the social group did something. But the Swedes had a way of not needing much aid.
No, they were healthy.
They were healthy, and they believed in helping themselves, and their families helped them. They weren't the type that, you know...
Did they associate with American groups so much?
Yes, they did. So, some of them did. You had to. I mean, as far as groups are concerned, what do you mean, like a,
well,
like
a
lodge?
Playing bridge and lodges and things well, at that time.
Well, some of them joined the Eagles, which was a social club. Well, we had, there was my drinking uncle. I could tell you about him.
Well, we had to have both sides to make it even.
They used to meet at Vic Fredrickson's saloon downtown, and Vic Fredrickson was kind of a little politician, and I don't know what it amounted to, but there were quite a few of the Scandinavians that would meet regularly at his beer parlor down on 23rd and between Market and Mechanic.
They cashed the checks there on Friday, so
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure they did. Yeah, that was a sort of a social for the men. I don't know what the women did. That was in the days when that was a man's sanctuary. They couldn't, no. The women couldn't break that.
So there they discussed the politics.
They discussed politics and the work and so on. I don't know what went on there.
Well, I do know that the ladies, the Swedish ladies, used to get together and meet in the homes, not as a social, but just good friends, Swedish, like Miss Johnson and Miss...
Oh, well, that was...
Well, you, Mrs. Franke, you're a sister of Harold Reinhardt. Here.
Yes. And, I live in Beaumont now.
I didn't know it's of Houston, isn't it?
East.
East of Houston.
Not in Beaumont. Right. Uh-huh.
So maybe you remember something from the old days when your parents... how about the ladies? Your brother, you said his uncle here went to one place, but how about the ladies? What did they do then?
Well, I think in the church work, they used to work, and they'd have chili suppers and brazos around the Christmas time, and the ladies would make things and sell them and auction them off. They used to have an auction sale, you know, down there, and to make a little for the church, and then they'd sell food, too, besides, and they had many faithful workers there. They're all gone now, like my brother mentioned, Mrs. Engstrom, and her sister, Mrs. Westman, was another faithful worker down in that church. And my mother and several others. And then besides that, mother and all the Swedish people used to get together once a week and meet in the home and just have a little coffee and cake and celebrate their birthdays or just social together, you know, just to keep in contact with one another.
Oh.
And I can remember the church on 18th and Market when they met in the building up in the back before they had the new church. And I was confirmed in 1927 there by Pastor Herlin at the sign.
In Swedish or?
No, just English.
Oh, so that was already passed off then.
But I can remember off. the Swedish being held on Sundays. I used to have to stay with Mother because it was just that's all I had. And I just stayed there. I could learn to sing with the hymns and go through the Swedish ritual. I understood it. But sometimes, it's like my brother said, the pastors there, it was hard to grasp, you know, because there were different speaking brogues there that you couldn't hardly. But Pastor Herlin really brought it over very good.
So they had problems too, then, the pastors?
Yes,
to,
that's right. Uh-huh.
They to had, make a sermon stick.
That's
good.
Right.
No. So how about the ladies now? I mean, in the home, could they get the husbands with them to church on Sunday, or they had problems maybe sometime? Do you think there was a ladies' work really that built the church up?
Well,
in many places
I think
like
sometime, yes, you know, kind of get together, work hard, really. Uh-huh. That's right.
Too.
They put extra money in. There were really faithful workers down there at Sign. I think that's what helped, you know. In fact, I've heard a lot of the ministers say sometimes if it wasn't for these faithful ladies, the ladies' aid of the church, we wouldn't be where we were sometimes as it is.
It's a true statement.
That's right. And but speaking about... These others, it's like I said, they're more centered around the church here, these group of people. They were always living and working for the church.
Well, that's the group you know, Anna.
Yes, that's right, but I don't know about that.
He's interested in if we know of any others.
No, I don't really.
There was what she was talking about, these family, these friends that get together. There was a way that they had communication with each other, and they were there were several groups of ladies that would meet in the homes for socials and at birthdays and things like that, and they would visit that way, but it wasn't only a church related, it was they just crossed their religious lines there, yeah.
Relax a little bit.
And Mother had a lot of friends that were in, say, in the Methodist, Scandinavian Methodist, or some that had even joined other church groups or had
there
no church.
Now, how about the Methodist? No, I mean, there were there was two churches there, the Lutheran and the Methodist.
Yeah. Scandinavian Methodist, they called it.
The Scandinavian.
It was mostly Swedish, though.
Yes.
That's why I got the name Scandinavian.
Well, Scandinavian is Norwegian, too, and he's
not
interested
but
in Norwegian.
Yeah, but I mean, they said Scandinavian, well, but it was Swedes in there,
too. We include everybody.
That's right.
How about there was a religious difference then between the Swedes and the Scandinavians, but they still cooperated in community efforts, the Methodists, and like today, for instance, you know, all the church groups are going together in ecumenical ways.
Yeah.
That's right.
Did they do it at that time?
We had joint picnics together.
The Methodists and the Lutherans?
Yeah, sure.
Oh. Did they exchange pulpits?
No.
They didn't do that.
The street. Norwegian.
Well, he's not interested in Norwegian, I'm telling you that.
I know, but I mean, there was some that came over to that church. I was there.
Interview med Harold Reinhardt, Galveston, Texas. Fortsätter på nästa sida. Detta är sida nummer 2, intervju med Harold Reinhardt, Galveston, Texas. Och det är idag december den 9, 1974.
We had joint pictures, that's all.
No, they didn't exchange puppets, no. Although we've had, I guess we had exchange of other programs.
What do you think was the difference then that kept them apart? Was it because the Methodists didn't want to be Lutherans or...
Well, I think it was based on the type of service, the ritual. I think the Methodists that joined that group like the informality of the Methodist. They didn't like to be confined to a set ritual that we follow. We had one man that was very active in that church. He was superintendent, and my dad asked him that question, "Why did you leave the Lutheran church, Alfred?" Well, he bluntly told my dad, "Because there were no Christians in the Lutheran church." So he was a little bit, you know, self-righteous there. I guess it was similar to the, it was the closest thing, rather, to what the Covenant Church in Sweden, this Methodist, met their need. The type of singing, the informality, and that sort of thing was, met a need that they had that the Lutheran Church didn't satisfy. But there wasn't any friction between us because we were all pretty good friends. That's why I say we'd meet outside of the church in social affairs. We had an annual picnic together. And the women, of course, would meet in the different homes. I was going to tell you about a character that was interesting here, and that was a Swede that had a vegetable cart that he called on the Swedish homes. He used to go to the produce row and get tomatoes and apples and celery and carrots and things like that, and he had this cart that he pushed, and he would call on different people, and he would if they were all like my mother, he didn't have to buy any meals because there was always coffee and cookies, and if you were hungry there was eggs and potatoes and things like that. And he was a little gossip too. He would carry the news about what's happening down in Mrs. Jacobson's house or Mrs. Olson's house or Mrs. Swenson's house, and then when he left our place, he'd tell about what happened at the Reinhardts. But they didn't all work as longshoremen. We had one that was was a vegetable merchant that pushed his wagon all over Galveston, and he lived to be what, about 75?
Yeah, his name was Lindquist. And
he was important, I
yeah.
So you first had, news.
You, so you had some different characters here.
Oh, uh-huh, they all played a part in the, yeah, in the living.
I don't know if that's any different than anything you've heard, but it was, I've never seen another fellow like that or heard of anything like that, but we had our Lindquist.
As Galveston being a very important seaport now, I'm sure you got a lot of, maybe not stranded seamen,
no,
but sometimes seamen in trouble. I mean, that's they right, always get in some kind of hush with the law and so forth.
Right.
Did the church help out then in a way?
Well, they had this, what they call the Norwegian Seamen's Lutheran Church, across from Zion Lutheran, Swedish Lutheran. And at Christmas time, they were separate church, you know. They had their church and we had ours. Catechol and Norwegians had theirs and we had ours. But at Christmas time, they found out when a seaman ship was coming in, I mean, a foreign ship like Norwegians or Swedish, and they would plan a big Christmas party for the seamen to invite them, those who could come off to shore to this Norwegian Lutheran church. And they would give a Christmas party, and the ladies would go together and they'd have cookies and coffee and sandwiches. And they had a big Christmas tree, and then they had a man by the name of Mr. Ash, Osk, they pronounce it in Norwegian, and he spoke to the fellas, if they were Lutherans, I mean Norwegians, he'd speak a little message in Norwegian about the Christmas season to them. Or if it was Swedish, they'd get somebody to speak in the Swedish language to the boys if they couldn't speak English. And in between, they would have get these ladies of the church to bring gifts like stockings and writing pad, tablets, and different little odds and ends the boys could use when they went back on the ship. And then they would put some kind of little notation in Swedish or Norwegian, like, to the man with the largest feet, come up and get this package, just some little humor, you know. Or to the one who writes home the most, come and get this package. It would be in their language, see, and they'd understand what they were saying. They'd come up and get it. And then they would dance around the Christmas tree like they do and have music, and they had a real joyful time, and everybody talked to the different boys and made them feel at home. And they said that was the wonderfulest thing they ever had, to be away from home for Christmas and have a place like that to go. And they really enjoyed it. And same way around New Year's, if there was a ship in, they'd have like a little New Year's party and have coffee and cake and them for them to come over there and join it. And that's one of the ways they figured that they could keep, you know, these seamen from wandering off and Galveston maybe getting in the wrong direction, you know, and getting places where they maybe shouldn't be or something. And that really helped out a lot.
And then we had this seaman center, Bethel.
Seaman's Bethel, yes.
Was there a house then not too far from the churches? Or?
It was centrally located. It was, you might say, downtown. It was one block from the Lutheran church and two blocks from the Swedish Methodist Church.
And was that
Most of the
run by the two churches then? Or financially backed up by
It was financially backed by steamship people, steamship agents, tugboat companies, and others interested in the maritime work in the harbor here. The shipping interests, the longshore interests, All those that had to do with the port activities, the Galveston wharves. I believe that all the churches in the community contributed something to it. And later on, it became an agency of the community chest, or United Fund.
And the reason for it was to give the seamen a nice stay in Galveston.
Yes, those that were
to help out in
those that were waiting for a ship. It gave them a good home, a good room to stay in a good environment, because
away from the outside life.
Because the only thing that's open for seamen when they hit port is you know, what we call vice, beer joints and prostitution and things like that, and so this was to encourage people to have a good place to stay. They had recreation facilities, games, pool, checker, and so forth, and the chaplain would conduct. He was also the chaplain. This Reverend Sarner was his name.
Was he a Methodist?
He was a Methodist, yes, and he was in charge of that for many, many years.
Was he also the Methodist minister?
He was not the regular Methodist minister when he was chaplain, but he did serve as a substitute during a vacancy or during a vacation of the minister.
So his main job was to be the administrator of the Siemens.
That was his, yeah, that was his main job.
And there was a building not too far from the churches.
That's right, and not too far from the port facilities near the docks. And of course, Galveston has most of the churches in that day were centrally located within three-fourths of the churches were within a half a mile of each other, the different Methodists and Presbyterians and Baptists and Episcopalians. So it was convenient from that point of view. It was convenient from being just about two blocks from the center of town. It was convenient to the ships and to the docks and terminals. So it was centrally located.
Slut på intervju med Harold Reinhardt i Galveston, Texas. Och det är idag den 9 december 1974.